3, 2, 1. Hi, guys, and welcome to today's podcast, where I'm joined by one of the companies I've been associated with for many years, Semrush, and we've got Diana Richardson. So welcome to the show, Diana.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It's really cool to meet you finally, as we were kind of just chatting in advance. Like, I've followed you for a while in this industry too, so it's really cool to meet you face to face too. So this is gonna be fun.
No, it's weird how you see these guys online, and then before you know it, you know, you're doing a Zoom call or a recording.
Yeah, and it's great because you do know them, like, you know, like, you know each other from your interactions on other platforms and things, and then finally you get to have like that personal relationship like this, and it's just it keeps the community strong, and I love it. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's weird. But before we jump into anything, it's really weird how you make perceptions of people as well. I just assumed, as I was saying to you off air, that you were in London, and I don't know, Diana Richardson just sounds very UK, UK name, and I'm just like, she must be in London doing her thing, and you kind of look like Londonish. I don't know if there even is such a thing as a London look, but yeah, I just made a right assumption, and obviously I'd seen you around on Twitter and various other bits and bobs, but it wasn't until last week that I actually realised that you work for Semrush, and I'm kicking myself. I'm like, I know so many people in Semrush, and I've worked with Semrush for so many years, and I had no idea that you were actually a Semrush person, which is so bloody bizarre. But how long have you been at Semrush, just first and foremost?
Yeah, well, and I guess with my name, it doesn't help the case that I am named after Princess Diana from the UK. So like that, I can definitely see that correlation. And my family's actually been in America for a very long time. I just did a whole family tree. It was fascinating. And of course there's some European mix in there that were German and, you know, from England, and there's Irish, and, you know, you come out, male. It's not... not a secret that's where my background is from.
You're from all over the place. But yeah, the one thing I really am kicking myself though is the Semrush thing. Just having no, just complete ignorance, never knew you were there. But obviously your LinkedIn saying that you have been there since May 2020.
Yep. So I am newer.
So I'm going to make an excuse for myself. I didn't do much with Semrush over the last 12 months because just doing other things, launched my YouTube and all that stuff. But that's probably
TikTok. You're on TikTok and Clubhouse now too.
Yeah, I'm all over. I'm trying to just exploit everything. But that leads us nicely into the topic of social media. Obviously, your job at Semrush is you work with the Twitter community engagement, all of that kind of stuff. And obviously for me, jumping on TikTok and all of these things, it's just to explore other opportunities that are out there on newer platforms to see what traffic I can drive from that. And obviously with Semrush, something that's been relatively successful is the kind of Twitter chats and stuff like that, which I'm assuming you are the person behind that.
I'm one of several, but yes, I am behind the scenes on the Twitter chat, yeah.
So I'd be curious to know, you know, how that works. Like, so building a community, I've seen several people, not just Semrush, building Facebook communities, building this, that, and the next thing. How powerful really is that in terms of driving traffic to the likes of Semrush?
Yeah, it's hugely powerful, but I think it really also depends on the industry. You know, a community building strategy might not be applicable to every industry in, you know, out there, but in, as you know, like the digital marketing community, the SEO community, the Google Ads community, all of us are very vocal, and we love being in this community with, you know, with each other. And so it just makes sense as a brand for us to be part of that conversation, to instigate the conversation, to share our insight. And especially when you're talking about a company like the size of Semrush, with the data that we have and the teams that we have, we've got a lot to contribute to digital marketers. So that's what we love to do. But it takes it wouldn't be successful if that audience wasn't reciprocal. So, you know, if the audience isn't communicating back, then, community building might not be a digital marketing strategy you want to spend your time on. But we're lucky. We like to talk. Digital marketers love to talk. So it works great for us.
No, it is. I mean, I've only ever really operated in this industry over the years from leaving school. I've had a few crappy jobs, but it's always been digital marketing. I'm not sure if I'm biased towards it, but, obviously people do like their, at live events, the nights out, going to the clubs after it, or the, Semrush do the whole come to the Semrush party, get that community thing going. I can't speak highly enough of the way that Semrush. I've been fortunate enough to be invited to the private parties. I've been fortunate enough to be invited to the last, I think it was two or three, the last two or three summer jams, which are amazing. But there's a whole lot of time, effort, money, and investment that goes into that. But and Semrush are clearly very big on it. But day to day, when you're doing your job as community manager from Semrush, what does that actually involve? What are you doing on a day-to-day basis? It's not just about a Twitter chat, surely. Let's organize Wednesday's Twitter chat, throw up a few questions, job done. It's not that easy, right? So what does your day-to-day look like?
It's being integrated into the community. So, and you'll see this a lot too. Like, we obviously, Semrush as a brand, we're tweeting from our corporate accounts, and we're we have our Facebook group and we're sharing LinkedIn things from our corporate accounts. But you'll see a lot of engagement from us, the Semrush employees, and interacting on that personal level with other marketers, with our friends, with, the other Craigs of the world. And because we value like those relationships back to us. And so my day-to-day is staying in touch, like making friends, staying in touch with them, creating conversations from my personal accounts, but also from the Semrush corporate account, making sure we are answering questions, making sure we're asking questions and sharing our knowledge. And there's a lot of, it comes quite naturally. I don't know if it comes quite naturally to everyone. It comes quite naturally to me in like having a conversation online and having that come back to my brand. Like, I don't even think about it really as like coming back to my brand or a sales strategy or anything like that, because it's just a lot of fun to be out there and creating, like I keep saying, create conversations, but that's really what it is. And sharing, and you do that in a variety of different ways, whether it's, in the Twitter chats, whether it's asking a question, whether it's sharing an infographic, like all of those can be conversation starters. And maybe like, I kind of think about them like icebreakers. And then I love following up on the comments. And I mean, there's a team, but we have a team of people who are doing this. But we just, you have to value those interactions and really want to connect with those people on a one-to-one level. And that takes time and it takes a team and it takes effort, but it's enjoyable and it's rewarding and you learn so much. I've been doing digital marketing for a very long time, but I learn something new every freaking day. Like, it's a great way to kind of self-educate too. So there's so many benefits to it. It's hard to describe the day-to-day because it changes because social media is so fluid. But it's fun. It's fun.
And do you guys internally, and you can tell me not to ask some questions about this, so you get your job in Semrush, you might not know everyone that Semrush have been created, people have relationships with other people, then that person moves on to another company, you come in, do you guys actually have a list of people that you are told to interact with, or do you just freely go around saying, right, there's quite a cool guy, not that well known, but he looks as if he knows his stuff. Let's try and get him into the mix. How does it work? How do you, because obviously Semrush, I've been friends with Semrush for, 5-6 years, and I'm not sure how it happened. That's the weird thing. But how does someone new, because a lot of people say to me, Craig, How did you get in with Semrush, as if it was like some scandal, bribery? I don't know. It was very natural for me. Like, I just started talking to someone, and then I went to Brighton, and Olga's like, come to this party, and you become friends with Olga, then you go to other parties and you become friends with, you know, the non-public facing people in Semrush, like Victoria, who organizes the events and all of that kind of stuff. But how do you guys have a list, or are you free to just roam around and find out who's out there?
Yeah. So in the beginning of when I was learning my job too, it was kind of part of it too is, and I think part of the reason that I was hired was that I already had so much experience in the space. So I already know who the main players are. I already have my own relationships. So you kind of bring that with you. Yeah, just like Olga, just like Anton, like they already have like these, you know, their own spheres, and we work together on keeping those relationships, but we are very much allowed to have our relationships because that's what is important to us. Now you get the vibe of who might not be like the most vocal positive around Semrush or something like that, but you'll learn that as you go, and people are human, and people, you know, their opinions could change, and but it's really just solidifying, you know, our connections. And I mean, it takes an Anton, it takes an Olga, it takes a Diana to like make those true connections. And then we all then we all know each other through each other too. So it's, I mean, we work together. So.
No, I was just curious to know if it was, you know, you used your own personal thing, or there was some strategy behind it where on the wall of Semrush there was like,
it's like one of those like police walls with like the strings and no, but there's a cool part too of like, we do, I mean, I don't think this is a secret, like we socially listen. So when we can see who is generating their own conversations and then bring them into our world too. And that's kind of a fun part about this too. But that's why it's important to be in the community regularly. So you can see who else out there, and Twitter is a great space for this because your feed can be so impacted by other people that you already know retweeting someone new. And there's a great way to explore and find new people through social media platforms that you can connect with. And then that's probably how you got brought into the circle, Craig. It was like, you were tweeting something cool about SEO or digital marketing. Someone over here saw you and we were like, yeah, we want to talk to this guy. Olga was like, yeah, this guy knows what he's talking. Let me bring him in. And that is, I mean, it's a natural process. There's no, we're not like, no, we don't have like any boards of people. attention. We pay attention because we love it. We love the conversation. And we're always wanting to meet new people and bring them in too. So we're very active on, and a lot of us. So again, yeah, many people behind the scenes too, not just me or, you know, so it takes teamwork, but we love it. We love talking about it. So it comes natural.
It's because, as I say, it stood me in good stead over the years. I can't speak highly enough of the opportunities that Semrush have given me over the years. You know, as I say, it started with general messing around in social media, and then at a certain point they were actually making me speak at the certain events on their behalf when Fernando was busy.
Fernando's awesome at this too, yeah.
So I got speaking opportunities to build my own brand as well, so it works very, very well. Obviously you've got to be open for it, and that's what I want to try and get across to other people, because people think, Craig, how did you get in there? You know, it was just a run-of-the-mill conversation that led to much bigger things, and then they were saying like, can you go to search leads? Fernando's in Chile or wherever he was talking.
He's all over the world. We can't keep track of that guy.
And they're like, we would like you to go there, talk about Semrush site audits at Search Leads, which was a big event. I'm not sure if it still goes or not, Search Leads in the UK, but it was a big event. You know, there's thousands of people go there. And again, I'm like, bloody damn right, I'm going there. You know, great opportunity for me to build my brand, and hopefully I've done a good job in helping Semrush as well. But I think there's lots of things to come from it. But going back to the social media side of things, you obviously mentioned Twitter, but is that all you do is just Twitter, or do you do Facebook and all the other social media channels for SEMrush?
So we've got a whole team. So I do a little bit of them all, but we have a team. So we work together and we have our internal strategies of who's doing what, where, and things like that. I was originally brought on as like Twitter was going to be my home, but the role evolves and you know how that goes. So now it's a bunch of us, and it's great because we can talk about the different strategies on the different platforms. LinkedIn is very different than Twitter, what kind of content and conversations you're having is different. And then we're growing our Instagram right now too, which has been really fun because we've got to play around a lot with things like stories and visual communication. And so it's fun to be part of the team because you get to experience that different brainstorming and that different strategy, and you kind of hear from everybody. But I mean, we do have a really strong, like SEMrush has a really strong community on Twitter. That's why I keep bringing it up too. We have a lot of conversations happening on Twitter, and we do have our own Facebook group. So there's a lot of really cool interactions happening in that group specifically. And that's an interesting piece of community building, is creating your own kind of dedicated Facebook group, as opposed to, in contrast, like posting publicly and relying on comments on posts. You create this group, you create this community, and have people, that's how people in those groups meet each other, because they're, I have this question about the site audit, or I've got, how can I use this to boost my rankings? And they're talking to each other and we're contributing, but it's a great way to connect them to each other too, which is just as important in an industry like ours, where there's so much learning from each other. We at SEMrush want to foster that too, because it's so important. Oh my gosh, like how many things does Barry tweet a day that something is new in Google? And like, we're just trying to keep up with each other. So I love that aspect of the community building too, because it's not just for us, the brand, it's for the digital marketers too. And we're just happy to be part of the conversation.
Yeah. No, I think you guys have a lot to bring to the table in terms of data and everything mm-hmm. else. You fit into those conversations very well. But you mentioned Twitter is probably the most prominent one for SEMrush. I would actually argue that Twitter is probably the least valuable one from a personal experience, which, that was going to be one of my questions. Which mm-hmm. one do you think gets the most traction? So if you are a brand, you've obviously done this for other people as well in the past. Has it always been Twitter that works really well for you? Or do you find, like someone like me, I get more traction from Facebook mm-hmm. And potentially get more traction from everything other than Twitter? and of course, if I do something funny or crazy on Twitter, I get a bit more of a reaction. But if I was to post like, here's how to do a site audit, it really just doesn't get any uplift in Twitter for me. And I'm not sure if you would, in your experience, you would say like it's okay for like a SEMrush Twitter works really well, but for a guy like me, maybe showing your personality and stuff like that on Facebook and having a bit of fun mixed in with stuff is a better approach. What's your thoughts on that? Like, why would I not get any traction on Twitter?
Well, that's a great question. And that, I think, showcases the importance of testing and understanding your audience. And because there's many SEOs that I see have so much traction on LinkedIn. And mm-hmm. I think it comes down to like your consistency of posting, who you are connected with. So I think you're getting a lot of traction on Facebook, probably because your Facebook friends are a lot of us in the industry. And as opposed to like on mine, it's like my dad and my family in Maryland, and like none of them are SEOs. So on LinkedIn too, I think that's such a great space for industry specific information. So like we have a lot of fun, SEMrush, we have a lot of fun on Twitter, and with LinkedIn is a great place for us to showcase our data. And we love our infographics on LinkedIn, and we get a lot of traction over there. So I think like it's just testing out, knowing who you're talking to and where they are. And I loved what we were talking about at the very beginning too, where you're like experimenting with TikTok, and you're on Clubhouse now too, right? Like yeah. That, those are great experiments to run because you are finding where your audience is also, and your podcast here, you're doing a podcast and you're still continuing to experiment to see what resonates with your audience when, and a brand does the same thing. So I have seen dentists be very successful on Facebook. I have seen equipment manufacturers be very successful on LinkedIn. I think it just depends. And I think it depends on the work you put into it. And I've seen SEOs be really successful on LinkedIn because they are consistent. That is a huge piece of this. So you're probably very consistent on Facebook. And so we rely on it, but then the algorithms come into play and now they're showing me a lot. And I always sort by recent on LinkedIn anyway, because the top stuff, I'm a chronological person, but you know, it's like, it starts to really filter and show my SEO stuff at the top of my feed on LinkedIn, because that's what I'm interacting with the most on there. So algorithms come into play too, when it comes to momentum, but, it comes down to testing and consistency, I think, are the two biggest contributors there.
I've got a question for you you mentioned algorithms there. So, and this is just a theory of mine. I'm not entirely sure. So on the list of Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, it doesn't matter what one you look at. I try to be consistent across the board. So if I'm posting something, I'll post it across all of the different platforms. Now, that might be the right thing to do. It might not be. So I want to know your opinion on that. So should I basically, you know, if I've got a new video out talking about site audits, for example, should I be blasting that out on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Bab, and whatever else at the same time? And secondly, with a lot of the stuff that I do, a lot of it's videos. So I'm always driving people to YouTube, regardless of whether I'm on Facebook or Twitter. Is that potentially a problem? Because someone once told me, like, if I'm on LinkedIn, for example, and I say, hey, guys, I've got a site audit tutorial here, check it out, and then I'm trying to drive people to YouTube, the algorithm is not going to show that LinkedIn post to a much wider audience because it's got that link in there. So what's your thoughts on that? And also, you know, should I be blasting everything out across all of my social media at the same time, or should I do it in a different way?
Yeah, so I think that goes back to, and here's our first, it depends. I think it depends on your goal. Like, what are you trying to accomplish by promoting this new post across all of the channels? Are you trying to drive traffic to the website? Because then that's such a generic goal that it might not be the greatest strategy. What you could do is maybe if you're wanting to share and educate, maybe break up that post into a Twitter thread and share the same kind of content, but there, and you're repurposing, so you're not having to rewrite, and because content production is a very lengthy process sometimes, but you're still, and then there you can be judging the success on the engagement of that post and retweets and how people are interacting with it. And then if there's a YouTube version of that post and you want to promote that too, you can tie that into the post itself and link to YouTube from there, or you can promote it separately. I also don't want to degrade either the power of paid social. You know, that can help boost, even if you put a few bucks behind a really important tweet or a really important Facebook post, you can get a little extra traction with a few dollars and not, you know, outspend yourself. You can boost for a couple bucks. And that can help as well. But yeah, I think like the podcast episode, like announcing a new episode, I think it makes sense to kind of promote across the board. Mm-hmm. Cause you're really just wanting to, and it has to be to the right people. So, if your Twitter community just isn't digital marketers, then skip it. If the podcast episode is about something they're not interested in, but mm-hmm. I think wanting to promote something like that makes sense to share across several mediums. And a podcast is one of those things where you can't always exactly repurpose into like a Twitter thread or a Facebook post. So promoting the podcast itself makes sense. So it kind of really just depends on what you're trying to accomplish.
And what do you think on the scenario where I said, should I be driving people like on LinkedIn, for example, I'm on a podcast with Diana Richardson, click here to watch the podcast, which is going to go to a YouTube video. Is that a good thing, or do you leave that link in the comments?
I typically share the link as high as I can. So sometimes if the post or the tweet is long and you get like that see more, the read more thing, I try to post it up high so people understand that it's an interactive experience. But I also try to create and share videos in quick snippets too, so I can post it in the actual post itself. Mm-hmm. Just again, to make an interactive experience. And so people don't have to leave the platform. We do a lot of like quick tip videos on the corporate account that we just include in the post, so they don't have to go to YouTube. But yeah, as you know, with like our webinars that are an hour long, most of the cases, yeah, linking it to the YouTube page, if it's, you know, we're resharing the broadcast, absolutely makes sense. So it makes sense. And I haven't seen any shifts in performance or algorithms based on a link in the post versus a comment. I think for our, the user's experience, it's easier to tell that story that this is another link, another place you're going, if you mm-hmm. do it in the post itself. So I just think it makes a clear customer journey that way, as opposed to putting it in the comments. Putting stuff like that in the comments sometimes to me seems like it's, oops, I forgot something and I can't edit the tweet. So I have to, it was like an afterthought or a mistake. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a strategy to adding things into comments, but sometimes it can come across that way. So I'm just, I usually put it in the post if I can, the link out in the post if I can, or break the video down so I can create a video post.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. I think probably with me, I'm probably going for a scattergun approach and trying to do it too quick, whereas it would seem that you take a video or a post or whatever and really break it down and use it for multiple different reasons and mm-hmm. are a bit more strategic about that whole process rather than me just slapping it out and hoping for the best.
Well, there is strategy behind it. We're not just slapping stuff together.
So that's probably where I'm going wrong with that. I mean, I don't do too badly, but I think that I could be a bit more strategic and probably need to stop looking for volume and maybe focus a bit more in quality. But you mentioned paid social as well, which I do a lot of, especially when it was trying to grow my YouTube audience. I was trying to force people over there and for obvious reasons. But also the click-through rate and engagement and everything else helps my YouTube videos rank well. So I think, you know, paid social worked very well for me, in particular Facebook. And obviously, one little trick that I had for people who were starting to build their YouTube or their brand was to share it to like the Indian or Pakistani audience, because the cost of a click over there is like peanuts. I could literally get thousands and thousands and thousands of views for $10 to that particular audience, which was good for click-through rate and engagement and being able to get views and everything else. What's your thoughts in paid? If you get any other weird tricks like that, you know, where I'm seeing that one, it's not a weird trick as such. Like obviously the clicks over in India, for example, are like a penny, and there's literally, it's a country with a billion people there, and they're all, not all of them, but a big amount of people from India are really into their digital marketing. So it made mm-hmm. complete sense to do that. But is there any other little golden nuggets like that that you would consider for paid social media?
Yeah. And again, it's going to come back to your goals. Like, what are you trying to boost views? Or are you trying to build a community that will come back again and again and again? And if really you're just wanting to boost those views and get some cheap clicks, okay. But I think for like a longevity aspect you can use, and Facebook's tool, I actually really loved running paid Facebook ads because the targeting was incredible, and down to personal interests and, I mean, and job titles and lookalike audiences. And it was so fascinating to do that. You could craft exactly who you wanted to see these ads. And I think that actually helps bring the cost down. So even if it's an expensive market like the UK or the US, you can kind of hone down and bring down the cost if you only target people who are, you know, running social media. Like, don't worry about SEOs at the moment. Like, you know, target people who XYZ. Like, you, there's so much drilling down you can do to help, you know, judge the, you know, your cost and things like that. But it also requires appropriate copy and an appropriate visual and, you know, bringing all of that together to make a successful campaign that is going to bring you an audience that will stick around also takes a lot of thought, and it takes budget, and it takes resources. And, you know, so sometimes putting in that work is beneficial in the long run because that community sticks with you, and you know that that click is going to be someone, a quality person that is, you know, ready to jump in and have a conversation with you. And it will come back to the YouTube channel and will come back to the podcast because your content resonates with them. And that might cost more than the cheap click, but it's the ROI on that is obviously a little tricky to measure, but you can understand because you put the work into that targeting and the strategy that you'll know that these people are into you, they like you, and they're going to stick around. And I think that's more important. And that's a hard thing to communicate. You know, when I was working for an agency, it's hard to communicate that these things cost money. And yeah, yes, I can see that this is a 10 cent click, but this person might be hanging out with us for just a little bit. But let's spend a little bit more money to get the person who we're going to build a relationship with. They're going to really value our content, and they're going to share it and that with their community. And that's how you steamroll and kind of get that momentum going. So I remember having those conversations, you know, to clients and wanting to spend very little money because they saw all that this click costs 10 cents or whatever, but I'm like, you're not seeing the whole picture.
Yeah. it's a good way to try and change their mindset and get them to understand that it's maybe not, like, my goal was purely to rank well in YouTube. So clicks and engagement was all I needed for that. Whereas obviously Semrush is a brand who are looking to get monthly, you know, build more people into the community, monthly subscribers, yeah, and everything else, that it has to be slightly different. But what works with, so obviously doing paid, that's great. You know, you've got great targeting options. What type of things work well on those ads though, on paid social? Is it infographics? Is it videos? What do you find works best in terms of, you know, getting people interested in what you guys have got to offer?
That is where creativity comes into play. And I think it comes down to knowing, you have to know who you're talking to. And I think I've seen ads and organic posts work best when it's a very personalized kind of ad. Animation works really well, especially in paid ads, but it has to be well-designed. You know, great visuals go a really long way. Stock images, stock photos don't, because again, it's just going to look like an ad, and we have this scrolly world, so we're just used to like scrolling right past it. So anything, I love when there's like an actual, even if it's animated or if it's a screen, like recording of your screen, but I love when there's actual demos of the product or like in cars, like they've got the 360 tours. I love those kinds of visuals because then you also get, and it depends on you in the buying cycle too, but anything that's real, anything or creative, super visually different and interesting, which is sometimes hard when you do work for a brand and there's brand standards and, you know, a certain set of colors to use or something like that. We have an amazing design team, so our creative is always awesome. I love it, but it stands out, and we try new things too, which is really fun. But I think those, if you want to stand out in the feed, you have to know who you're talking to, so you can create something that will be and look interesting to them. Get creative, get a little funky, get a little fun. This is social media is fun. And be real. If you're, you know, demoing a product, if it's an, even if it's something like a new shampoo, like do a real demo and have that out there, because then people get a stronger sense of what this is actually about without having to investigate. You kind of remove that barrier.
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense. Now, I want to ask you one other thing on social media. You said you've got a great design team behind you, which I've seen your stuff and it all does look on point. However, not everyone has a great design team at their disposal. What tips or what platforms can you advise us on if, for example, you were working for a smaller company, it wasn't Semrush, and they said, right, Diana, get some stuff going on there, and you thought, right, I need a good infographic or I need a good image. Are there tools out there that we can get that make someone who's not the best graphically that can work very well for us? Because surely you must need to dabble in there sometimes. If your design team really busy with, you know, some other promotion, surely you've got to get your hands dirty sometimes to make something up yourself.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, this happens. This is such a common thing with like personal brands too. Personal brands, like Diana, I do not have a design team. It's just me. So I'm quite good at Canva. I also like to use, especially if like you're a Mac user, using the things like iMovie. I created a video myself when I was trying to get to 2,000 Twitter followers. I created a video just me walking along, and I added titles of in iMovie. I've also just been playing around with YouTube Studio on things like blurring effects and trimming and things like that. So be resourceful. Sometimes invest in yourself too. If you need to invest in the $100 Adobe subscription, invest in yourself. Like, you know, that's $100. I think it's $100 a year. It's not cheap, but it's not overly expensive. And I think that you have to, you know, invest in yourself a little bit if this is something important to you, but try every free thing you can. Demo, use free subscriptions. I mean, definitely test these out. Canva is a fantastic tool that I love because, you can choose, like if you're making a Facebook organic post, it's already, the dimensions are there. So you don't have to worry about resizing. You don't have to worry about pixel sizes. You're like already there. And that's helped me a lot because I help family with stuff, and I have an uncle who owns a record store. And so like, I help him, design stuff. And, you know, so again, using it for like personal use, because I don't have the Semrush design team on personal projects. You get resourceful, but luckily at work, I have an amazing design team.
I've got one person that does it for me, but if she's busy, I'm stuffed, and that's where I have to revert to. Canva is one that I have used just purely because I'm a douchebag, and me playing on Adobe is just not going to end well.
Canva can get really complicated.
Yeah, Canva for someone like me who has zero design skills is a great option. But before you do jump off, I just want to talk about your previous experience. Obviously, you've been the director of digital marketing at the Red Chalk Studios, and prior to that, you were doing SEO and paid and all that kind of stuff. Now, if someone else, I would say you're a fairly all-round, well-experienced person in the industry. If someone was looking to now get in the industry, now knowing what you know, you've had a shot of social, you've had a shot of paid, you've done SEO, what do you think is a great career choice going forward for the next 5 to 10 years? Because, you know, a lot of people say, is SEO dying? Is it too competitive to now come into as a newbie? Is social media the way forward? Or is it better going down the paid route? What, in your opinion, is the best career choice for someone to jump into?
And I think as like a general, like if you're in college and you're, you know, thinking about a digital marketing career path, you should get comfortable with content creation, because regardless of search engines go away or social media goes away, people will always consume good and helpful content. And that's been a staple since I started in my career path a bajillion years ago. Quality content has always been the thing. And if you think about before we had the internet, people read quality books. People watched quality films, like people in soak up that and things that are helpful. We have libraries for a reason. We have, you know, like there it's this, it's the hand, it's the tactile version of the internet is a library. And so, so invest in under how to tell a good story and how to create content. And then the other is analytics. No matter what digital marketing path you decide to go down, what suits you, you are going to have to track your progress. You're going to have to justify what you've done and the results that you want to accomplish. And you have to understand statistics. I wish I had taken statistics in school. And because I had a big old crash course in statistics when I started in SEO. And but you have to understand those things and you have to understand people because you want to understand like your audience's behavior and you can learn that as you go. But I think those three staples will help you regardless of what path you decide to go down. Now, I don't think search engines are going anywhere anytime soon. I think social media is fluid. So I think we'll always have some sort of social media, whether that's Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn in 10 years. I have no clue. But understanding and staying up to date on that sort of thing is important. And I think exploring new things, like exploring new search engines, checking out what DuckDuckGo is all about or checking what Clubhouse is all about, like keeping yourself in the know will help you, you know, not be behind, but it also help you if, I don't know, Google does seem to take a dive or something, I have no idea, then you already have an understanding of how the other ones work. So just keep staying up to date. But storytelling is a characteristic I wish I had learned earlier in my career, because it has helped me exponentially in this position specifically. But I think I could have been a stronger SEO had I been able to tell a better story with my keywords. And I learned as I went, but I wish I had had that skill sooner.
Yeah. All of these are good tips. As I say, a lot of people listen to this and they'll be like, you know, what career path do I go down? This all sounds very good. And I'm just curious to know from someone who's dabbled in a bit of everything, like myself, you know, you had to do that back in the day when I was doing this. You had to do a bit of paid social. You had to do a bit of this and a bit of that. And although you know you're garbage at certain areas of it, like graphics, for example, for me, was just an area I'm never going to get better at. But I think, you know, doing, you know, just feeling your way around and seeing what's good is a good thing.
You have to know what you enjoy doing. And sometimes you don't know that until you've tried it. I did not have any experience in digital marketing because I started in 2006. It was not taught in college. It was not like, I didn't know that I liked this until and it's funny too, because I didn't realize how much I liked research and understanding like human behavior until my job, before I got into digital marketing, I investigated car damage on rental cars. And it took a lot of research. It took a lot of putting pieces together, solving problems. No case was the same. And I didn't realize that those were things I liked and that I was good at until I had that job. So if you're not sure what path to take, think about your assets. What are you good at? And it might not seem like it's a direct correlation to digital marketing, but I bet you there is. And so just think about what you enjoy and how that can tie into digital marketing, if that's something you're going to or want to pursue, because you probably already have experience and skill sets that will apply. SEO is teachable. PPC is teachable. Social media management is teachable. But if you have like the underlying love of looking into data and investigating things and solving problems and and being with people, like then that can build your career path. So even if it's not direct experience in digital marketing just yet, it's all teachable.
It is. You've just got to, you know, if I can do it, the way I would say to other people is anyone can do it.
Yeah, we all had to learn. We weren't born with this. We weren't born to be digital marketers. We all learned. So it's teachable. So don't freak out if it's like, you know, if you're like, I don't have any social media experience, that's okay. You'll learn. The point is you like people and you're great at conversation. And so that should be a career path for you to explore.
Yeah. No, definitely. And it is, as you say, it's a great career. You can make decent money, decent friends. I've been able to meet Russians and same Russian and all the other, all of the other stuff like American.
You do hear a lot of great accents in this industry.
Yeah.
That's and a good point. It's a worldwide community that we are a part of. And, you know, and I think the fact that we're able to do it so virtually now has actually expanded our ability to connect with each other. And I have met, like, if we were relying on in-person interviews, we wouldn't be really chatting today because we live in different, we live on different continents. And I had, I had a podcast with Phil Adair. He's in Australia. Like, I've never been to Australia, and him and I would have never have become friends. And we live in, it's a really cool thing that we are so virtual now, and but we're also naturally online anyway as being digital marketers. So it's just, it's been a really fun, if there's a silver lining to what we've been through in the last year, it's that we've been able to connect more, I think, as a digital marketing community. And we're doing a lot more video, and we're not just on Twitter, we're not just talking on LinkedIn, like we're actually like coming together through Zoom and you know, and the like. So it's been a really cool year, I think, in digital marketing.
Yeah, no, I've definitely spoken to a lot more people that I probably would never ever have spoken to. And but listen, I can't emphasize enough though that over the years I've been like last year, end of 2019, Semrush took me to India for the Semrush Marketing Conference, whatever it was called, in Bangalore, which was amazing. And I was only there for 30 hours, but my God, what a great experience. It was a great experience, great people, fun time. We just got drunk, as you always do. And things. I'm looking forward to going back to that as well, because I do miss that a lot. And because I feel like 2019 I probably traveled to probably 10 different countries. No, I've done about 25 talks. I was in Poland, I was in America, I was in India, I was in France, and then boom, it all just stopped. So I was in like, you know, 15 different countries, and then it all stopped. So I do miss that, but as you say, it's good to do it virtually as well and get to know more people, but I do massively miss out on the parties and stuff as well.
I really do too. I right before the traveling stopped, like literally the end of January 2020, I had spoken at a conference in Colorado, and it was this really cool, it's called the Outdoor Retail Conference, and wonderful conference. It was fascinating to go to, beautifully done. And then, yeah, just no more. For a year now, they're holding their conference right now, and you know, but virtually, and so it's been one whole year like without in-person networking. I was part of like so many like in-person networking groups, happy hours and things like that, and I miss that a lot right now too. Like you said, like this is like a conversation we could have had at a pub. That would be so much fun if we could.
Yeah, just record it in a pub and just. Your PCs are the microphones and record it while half drunk, and you know, I've done that a few times and got a lot of good information out of people when they've had a few beers in them. They're just a bit looser and a bit more talkative. So that was always the plan with the podcast, was to do it in person at events, but I've had to revert to this for now. That's the best we can do, but it is what it is. But I don't want to keep you for too much longer because I know you've got a lot of things to be doing with your day.
I'm sure.
So if someone wants to reach out to you, maybe just to touch base, talk to you, wants to become your friend or whatever, where's the best place for people to find you?
Well, first and foremost, if you're not following Semrush on Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook, please go ahead and do that. We're easy to find. All of our handles are, and Instagram, all of our handles are Semrush. And if you want to reach out to me, which I would absolutely love, I am also easily findable on all the social media platforms, but I do most of my communicating on LinkedIn and Twitter. So on Twitter, I am DianaRich013 because 13 is my lucky number. And then on LinkedIn, I'm Diana Richardson, and there's a little wine emoji next to my name because I love wine.
And she actually has got wine in her handle on TikTok as well.
I do, yeah.
So that's just a little secret. But no, thank you very much for taking the time to join me today. It's been a pleasure.
It was so great getting to talk to you. Like it just, I feel like it was meant to be at some point, and I'm really glad we got the opportunity to chat. So it was really fun meeting you.
Oh, good.
And now we're friends for life. So
cheers.